Chicago Bullseye Special Edition, 40th anniversary of Saturday Night Live Special. With your host, Mark Lewenthal, Fred Pfeiffer, Derek Rose's worthless three-point shot, Jimmy Butler's shoulder, a special dominating performance by Pau Gasol, a very, very brief cameo by Nikolai Meritich, a collective heart attack with all the Chicago Bulls players based on 45 minutes of intensity from Tom Thibodeau, musical guest, team physician, Brian Cole, an air ball from Kirk Heinrich, ladies and gentlemen, Fred Pfeiffer and Mark Lewenthal.
Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to a special edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lewenthal. With me, as always, is the man, Fred Pfeiffer. Fred, how are you?
Mark, I'm living the dream, brother. I'm living the dream. Bulls, three games in a row now, three wins in a row. Things are looking definitely up for the beloved.
Crappy teams. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, Sacramento. Hey, you got it. Before they were losing against those teams, right? And it hasn't exactly, brother, it hasn't exactly been a problem beating the good teams. I mean, we beat Golden State, San Antonio. We beat Houston not that long ago. I know we lost recently. We also beat Dallas. I mean, we've beaten some good teams. To me, the bigger issue has been losing the poor teams at home. So with every victory, every dominant victory over a poor team, that's a good thing. It's funny. I got into like a little bit of an argument. I'm become the resident expert here on defending Pau Gasol and the contributions that he's added to this team. It just completely bewilders me how much hate the guy receives, for especially when you consider he took less money to come here. That's a really good precedent to send. Let's just jump all over a guy that, you know, decided to take less money to come here and perform extremely well, but let's hammer him for you know, the things he doesn't do. Let's continue to do that. That's a really good idea. But that said, he's just absolutely destroyed it lately on the offensive end. Last night was phenomenal performance, but I saw a couple critiques of him from the haters saying he's a bum slayer. And, you know, my counter to that is, you know, there's two types of teams in the NBA. There's teams with bum slayers and teams with bums. So I'd rather have a bum slayer than not. I don't understand this concept that, oh, he only beats up on the bad defensive front courts. Can you really count six or seven great defensive front courts? I can't in the NBA. You know, I that's incredibly idiotic, horrible article that I don't even want to refer to, but I will probably in the next episode, because I'm going to break down the criticisms of Gasol in this article, which basically said it was a mistake to sign him, which is complete idiocy. Even the biggest Gasol haters would admit for $7 million it's a bargain to bring him on the team. It's up to Tibbs to either, you know, bring him off the bench or start him, whatever you see fit. There's no doubt that, you know, that guy he's killed the bad teams. Well, guys would love to have a guy like that at the low post, killing Milwaukee Bucks. He criticized him because he scored 46 in Milwaukee. Milwaukee's a playoff team. I mean, what is wrong?
Isn't he going on like 20 games now of 20-10?
He's going on. No, it's actually 13 games. I think it's 13. It's too short of the record for the Bulls, which is 15 of double double. But he leads the NBA in double doubles. But that doesn't matter because he's big and he gets, how can we argue that?
I mean, what's there to argue? His statistics are so good this year that you can't argue he plays good enough where his statistics even out to be really good. Now, the last three games, I don't even want to talk about Pau Gasol. We'll talk about him the next show. But I think he's been great for this team. The last three games. The New Orleans game, Anthony Davis got injured early in the game. The Orlando game was a pathetic game. We should have won that game by a lot. We were up by 16 points for almost like – we were up by double digits for almost the entire game. And then we just gave away the game in the fourth quarter. And we were so lucky to hang on to that win. So I'm going to put that out there as a loss in terms of how I felt about that game, because that game was ridiculous. And then the Sacramento game, great. You went out and you slayed a bad team. I mean, they went out last night and they slayed a bad team. Now I'm happy that they did. That's what they should do to teams like Sacramento. But at the same, and that's a team that's in turmoil right now. That's a team whose coach right now is about to get fired. I mean, come on. I'm just like, I don't think that these are impressive wins. I'm not excited about it because let's play some decent teams. Sacramento, of these last three games, they're the best team we've played because of the fact that they were healthy. But come on, your coach is about to get fired.
We got destroyed by them in November, Mark, without Gasol.
But that was before their coach was about to get fired.
Well, it still happened. It's still, we were completely dominated by Cousins in that game. You think Cousins was thinking about his coach getting fired when he was out on the court last night?
There's no way that is not a distraction for the team. They are negotiating a contract right now with George Karl. I mean, the fact that they're doing that the team, they've fallen a lot over the last handful of games. Right now they're very sub 500. They're something around like 20-33 or something. They're not good.
No, they're not a good team, but you still dominated and destroyed them. And somehow the offense looks fantastic without Kirk Heinrich out there to set it up. It just in general, the whole fan base with the Noah and Gasol can't play together. Well, we've dominated the first quarter with Noah and Gasol against Orlando. We dominated again last night with those two. They seem to be playing a lot better together, and the defensive statistics reflect that fact. I just don't – just there's a ton of hate going on and, you know, a ton of we can't do this and something needs to change. And I agree it was not a good month in January. But, you know, Dunleavy's back. Let's just see how we look going forward. I really think we're going to start seeing, you know, hopefully things turn around and get a little bit better. I think they will. And I think that we'll, you know, hopefully if we can stay healthy going to the playoffs, I still feel good about these guys. I still do. Call me crazy.
I think we need a little bit of wing help, but we'll talk about it on the last show because I think, you know, when you get to this point of the season, Fred, I think all of our listeners can agree that it starts to get a little stale in terms of the conversation because you kind of start talking about a lot of the same things because you've seen the same trends over and over and over again. So today we're going to do a special episode.
Hold on, though. Fred and I do want to bring up one more topic. We got to talk about Taj. Taj is in a ton of trade rumors. I'd like to get your opinion on if you think that's a good move to move Taj.
We clearly have right now, I feel, depth issues at the wing. Now, I realize Dunleavy was out and Dunleavy's back now, but like you're saying with Kirk Heinrich and how great it is when he's not playing, we need more guys on this team that can score in the backcourt. We need more guys that can create off the dribble. We have pieces down low. So, Taj is not having one of his better seasons. He's turning 30. I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like we have more flexibility in our front court than we do in our back court. So I have no problem at this point trying to get more wing players because, A, that's the weakest part of the NBA right now. I feel like you've got a lot of good point guards, but twos and threes, especially twos, it's limited. Threes, you've got a couple, like, super-duper crazy ones. But besides that, like, you know, as a whole, wing players right now I think are kind of there's less great ones. You're becoming, again, a league that has a lot of good big men in it. So, but we have good bigs, and we have good bigs. So, I mean, I think that we'd be fine without Taj Gibson, especially considering just the life of Pau Gasol, how long he should be productive on this team. I think that he's going to be more than fine for what we need. More than fine. Great.
I disagree. I don't want to see him go. I don't think he's played very well. Taj has played very well at all lately. I think he's been really bad lately. I don't know what's going on with him. I still don't think he's healthy. He doesn't have the explosiveness that he's, you know, we're accustomed to seeing him. And I noticed yesterday, and I tweeted this out, he wasn't really closing out on jump shots like he usually does. He doesn't seem to be as active as he usually does. I'm just pointing that to the fact that he's probably a little bit still hurt and getting healthy. I think come playoff time, he's going to be extremely valuable like he always is. He's always played well in the playoffs. He's always been a dominant force and a great force off the bench for us. And plus, you got two guys in Noah and Gasol, especially Gasol, who's still, for some reason, playing an ungodly 38, 36, 37 minutes every night. Do you really feel it's impossible that these two guys are going to be, you know, do you think is it possible that one of these two guys could get hurt before the end of the season? I think the
I bank much higher on the fact that we would need what we need to make this team better than players are going to get hurt. I don't want to plan for injury when you've got holes on the team.
I keep on hearing Aaron Aflalo. I'm not a huge fan. He's a slightly overrated player. But even if you bring him in and get rid of Taj, You think Jimmy Butler's suddenly going to start playing 36 minutes a game? Do you think, you know, is he a ton better option than Dunleavy and Butler? Is that like
But it puts Dunleavy, it allows either Dunleavy to come off the bench, or it allows you to have a sixth man who can score. I mean, you've got Aaron Brooks right now too, but you'd have another player in the backcourt that can score. It's going to do more to alleviate the gaps that we have in the backcourt. I'm not necessarily thinking about Taj Gibson here or Mike Dunleavy. I'm thinking about the fact that he'd be taking over the minutes for Kirk Heinrich that he's playing right now, that he'd be able to do, depending on who you go after. I'm hearing Wilson Chandler, too, is a little bit bigger. You know, it'll give you more flexibility where and when you can play Jimmy Butler. I'm not crapping on Mike Dunleavy. I have no problems with Mike Dunleavy and his role on the team. My only issue is that I feel like he can keep starting. I just feel like we need more punch offensively in the backcourt. So
Aaron Aflalo is now almost 3 years old. He's shooting 42.8% this year from the field, 33% from three. Not impressive to me at all, statistical-wise. I know he's an upgrade defensively on Dunleavy, and I know it is nice to have a little bit more, you know, depth in at your wing positions. My point is, as soon as the playoffs start, Butler's going to be playing 48 minutes a night. I don't think it's going to be as important. It's just not, because Butler's going to be playing 48 minutes, and that's what's going to happen. Tibbs is going to do that. Now, of course, if Butler gets hurt, and, you know, he's out an extended period of time, he's hurt now, but shouldn't be out that long, although then obviously there's an issue, then you might have to make drastic measures. I'd still rather go with the team as is, finish off this year, and if we fall short again, I'm fine with trading him. Taj, that is.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I believe that I'm okay with getting rid of Taj Gibson. I mean, like, so overall, I mean, I think there's holes on this team in the backcourt.
Yeah,
what's
the hole we got to fill, right? It's shooting. Aaron Afonso is shooting 33% from three. It sucks. He's not.
Yeah, but he's shooting like
he might have been 44%
inside. But the team's much worse too. They've gotten progressive. Well, Orlando's horrible. So he's on Orlando now. He's on Denver last year. Different type of team. And the fact that Denver plays a more up-and-down quick style of basketball could lead to the fact that he was scoring more. But I'm not just talking about Aaron Follow. Let's see what sorts of options may become available as the trade deadline nears. But, you know, I don't want to just start, like, rattling off this guy or that guy or whatever. A backcourt player is, I think, what we need. There's players that are out there. I mean, Taj Gibson, I think, is a valuable commodity. He's been certainly valuable to us. And he's a player that's going to be going, but he's never started. And we've got we had enough depth on this team last year that Taj Gibson didn't start. So it's like now that you have Pau and now that you've got Nico, I mean, do you have even more depth? It's like, I mean, if Taj isn't, we don't have that kind of depth in the backcourt that we have in the frontcourt.
I love Nico. Nico cannot even remotely guard centers in this league. He's too small. He's not.
But he wouldn't be starting.
He doesn't have enough weight.
Pau's going to be. Powell's playing 48 minutes during the playoffs.
No, hopefully he won't be. But when we hit the playoffs and we get a big, big center, or we get like Washington again with the two big guys there, you're going to need Gibson. You absolutely are. Noah has always had problems with big guys.
Play.
No,
but Noah's always going to play, though. It doesn't matter because even if he's struggling, he's going to get the minutes. Noah, you never see Taj replacing Noah because Noah's having a bad game.
I guess it comes down to this, Mark. I feel it's more likely that Noah or Gasol get hurt than it is that Butler gets hurt. Therefore, I don't want to get rid of Taj Gibson. I guess
we don't have the same flexibility in that part in the backcourt.
You got flexibility in that you have Jimmy Butler playing 48 minutes. You only have one position you have to worry about, then, which is shooting guard, and you could get through it with a mishmash of Aaron Brooks, you know, throw Dunleavy in that position for a little bit, and if Tibbs ever gets his head out of his ass, maybe he throws McDermott out there for a few minutes, you got him too. You know, I just, you know, whatever. I don't want to get it down this path. I'm not going to bash Tibbs this whole show. What he's doing?
We got a special show today. So let's get to what we want to talk about today. Special show.
Okay.
So today we're going to do a show. So pretty much, if you want to hear about Bulls basketball, turn off the show right now and tune into our next episode. But today, 40th anniversary of Saturday Night Live is coming up, I believe, the 15th. Saturday Night Live, Fred, I know is a show that you and I both grew up with, a show that means a lot to both of us. I mean, overall, 40 years, it's been pretty good overall. I mean, most of the time I feel it's been better than more than it's been worse, though it's had its ups and downs. One of the greatest shows of all time, some of the most intriguing cast members of all time. Rolling Stone today came out with a list of the best set of ranking every single person that's ever been on the show. Now, we are not going to cover the entire list today because it's too many people. It's 143 people. So I recommend for everybody listening to this show, go to rollingstone.com. The list is right there. You could see every single person on the list. We, Fred, are going to go through this list, and we're going to talk about the people that we think Rolling Stone should have put higher, and then are we going to give our top 15? Is that what we're doing?
Top 10.
Yeah, well, let's do 12. I got my list already, so I can give my list, you know, whatever. But I want to start from the bottom of this list here, right, with Rolling Stone magazine. And I agree that at the bottom – I mean, I think that a lot of this is fluff. You're trying to put in big – you want to make a splash. So the last person on the list here is Robert Downey Jr. Obviously, he didn't make an impact on Saturday Night Live. But a lot of people didn't make an impact on Saturday Night Live. So, I mean, I think that by putting a name like that low on the list, you're just trying to make a bit of a splash. But what kills me is that two spots above that is a guy by the name of Jim Brewer, who I thought when he was on that show was one of the best people on the show. And he had sketches every single week that you looked forward to. He had the Pesci sketch. He had Goatman sketch. Was he the greatest castmate of all time on Saturday Night Live? No. But to put him at 139 out of 141 is ridiculous.
It is.
Jim Brewer was a quality cast member on SNL, memorable cast member.
I wasn't a huge fan, but, I mean, there's people I didn't even recognize for the vast majority of this list. How do you have him behind those people? At least you recognize him, right? And at least he did bring some chuckles eventually, right, to the show. It's laughable. This list is an abomination. Let me just put it there. For Will Ferrell not to be in the top five is insanity. They got him 12th. As soon as I saw that, I said, this list is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Well, he's got to be in the top 10, and you have him 12th behind Amy Poehler. I mean, are you serious? And Tina Fey? Did Tina Fey and Amy Poehler really bring more laughs to your life than Will Ferrell? Is that logical?
Will Ferrell owned the show when he was on it. I mean, there was no question that when Will Ferrell was on that show – that he was the number one cast member on that show. And my issue with Tina Fey being 3 on this list is the fact that she was great on Weekend Update, and they revived Weekend Update. So, and we'll talk about Weekend Update in a second because they put a few of the cast members extremely low that hosted Weekend Update. But, you know, Tina Fey revived that. That was really good. But besides that, as far as a character actress goes, the only person that I thought she did really well was Sarah Palin, and she owned it with Sarah Palin, and it had a huge impact on the show. But beyond that, I mean, to tell her me that she's number 3 above people like Phil Hartman, Dana Carvey, Mike Myers, guys that owned the show when they were on, guys that clearly pushed the show. We got to remember, pretty much SNL has two generations, I believe. You've got the first generation, which is what everybody considers the classic generation, but then that show would have been canceled after that if it wasn't for that late 80s crowd that came in when you had like Chris Farley, Phil Hartman, Dana Carvey, all those guys.
Sandler.
The show would not have made it if that show didn't start really picking it up at that point. So I feel like you've got that early section of the show, then you've got everything else. And, I mean, you did have – I mean, Murphy – but the show wasn't great when Murphy was on.
No.
Murphy was great. And he owned – I mean, he pulled the show when he was on.
Murphy was like almost like a one-man show at that period. I mean, there were some good guys in that era. Billy Crystal was pretty good in that era, I remember.
That wasn't his era. Billy Crystal was not on with – no. Billy Crystal was on for one season with like Martin Short. They brought in
85. He was on in 84.
But they brought in – but Eddie Murphy was out in 84.
Oh, that's when he left? That's right, Raw. That was pretty good.
They tried to put together like a Brooklyn Nets sort of lineup there in the 84-85 season with like Billy Crystal, Martin Short, guys that had established careers already. Robert Downey Jr. was one of those. The other Belushi, Jim Belushi. And the show was awful. It was like it almost got canceled, and it's what brought – you didn't have Lauren Michaels for that brief period of time, and Lauren Michaels came back shortly after that, and the show suddenly got revived again. But for anybody on that list to be put ahead of – anybody from that season to be put ahead of frickin' Jim Brewer even, I've got major problems with that. That's like the worst that the show ever was. And Tina Fey at the end of the day, Tina Fey's a good cast member, but – and I mean when you talk about – the revival of women on that show. There's two things Saturday Night Live has always been really bad at, in my opinion, and that's profiling, having, you know, strong women and having strong African Americans or minorities in general. Like, it's always just been white men that kind of push that show. But you're starting to have that now, but a lot of them haven't necessarily established themselves yet to the point where we're going to put them in our top 15s. But in
I don't know about that. Hold on a second. Eddie Murphy totally was a one-man
band in
that show.
But give me another guy. Give me another African American that even really was like
a
member of the cast.
Chris Rock was on the show. Chris Rock.
But he wasn't great on Saturday Night Live. He was not even featured on the show. He was like the only sketch I could even tell you about was the talk show something with an X. I can't remember what it was, but it was like a talk show where he was being like a radical.
Who's the big guy now? I always forget his name. He always does
Kenan Thompson.
Really good, solid guy. He's definitely
great.
In the top 30.
And I'm saying, that's now. And Jay Farrell. Jay Farrell's great.
He's great. And then women, I mean, Kristen Wiig was obviously right there with Will Ferrell as one of the best in that generation. I mean, she was
only
a huge
woman
talent.
That pushed the show. In my opinion, she's the only woman that actually, you could say, was the number one person as a cast member when she was on the show.
Gilda Radner was huge, too. She wasn't the best.
Huge, but you had a packed cast.
Yeah, but that's not her fault. She was still pretty big in that era. The thing about this list, which is such a travesty, a joke, though, I felt, is they did push up some women who had no reason to even be there. Tim Meadows was another huge African-American cast member who was phenomenal. He's 48. They have her behind Cicely Strong and Kate McKinnon from this era. Now, I like Kate McKinnon. She's the only one on that show I think is good. Cicely Strong, I've never once laughed at anything she's done on this show.
I like Cicely Strong.
She's attractive, but that's about it. She's not that funny.
Last week when they did the White Trash Awards with J.K. What's his name? J.K. Simmons. I thought that was really funny. I think you have a couple women now on the show that by the time this show's over, they're going to be some of the best of all time. And you certainly had, you know, like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey together were a dynamic duo. And Amy Poehler was great, but I put Amy Poehler ahead of Tina Fey because Amy Poehler did characters.
I would agree,
too. She had a million characters that she did.
Absolutely.
Her and Kristen Wiig were better than Tina Fey.
Kristen Wiig, I don't think there's any question there.
Kristen
Wiig is the best female to ever be on that show, and it's not really close. I put her in the top five, maybe. Top six. She was phenomenal, and everything she did was phenomenal. Now, Kate McKinnon is really good on the current cast. Again, she's the only one to me who really is a standout, but she hasn't had anywhere near enough time to or quality bits to say she's top 40. I mean, who is doing this list? Is this like done by? I have no idea what this is. I mean, come on.
I would agree. I mean, right now there's nobody on the show right now except for Kenan Thompson that I think should be in the top 30 just because you have such a new cast right now, though. They're making a name for themselves. Two of the women that are on the show right now are going to be two of the four Ghostbusters in the new Ghostbusters movie, Kate McKinnon and, what's her name?
Kristen Wiig, isn't she?
Well, she is, too, and Melissa McCarthy. But, she's the other person on SNL. She's got, like, the spiky hair, African-American, female.
I don't know, but how do they have Kevin Nealon at number 59 is, wow,
What about Colin Quinn and Norm MacDonald at 136 and 135? I mean, that's almost a decade of Weekend Update right there. And you're putting them behind, like, Randy Quaid, and you're putting them behind, like, Laurie Metcalf and Emily Prager. Who are these people? Jay Moore? When Jay Moore was on the show, you wouldn't have even known Jay Moore was on that show.
I would agree. Well, enough of the, you know, yip-yapping about
Kevin Nealon. Kevin Nealon was amazing. He owned that show.
Who's your best all-time cast member of Saturday Night Live? Give me your number one.
You know what? It's a tough one, Fred.
Saturday Night Live, Rolling Stone I'll give you the top 10 first, and then we'll get your take. They rank John Belushi number one, Eddie Murphy number two, Tina Fey number three, Mike Myers number four, Dan Aykroyd number five, Bill Murray number six. I mean, these are all great stuff, right? No doubt. Phil Hartman, number seven. Love Phil Hartman. Eight, Amy Poehler. You know, I don't think she's top 10, but she's great. Gilda Radner was great. I don't think she's top 10, but, Chevy Chase. Hard to argue with a lot of those. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that show, Mark. I know you're not. Back in the classic day, and it was, obviously groundbreaking, and no doubt people would come to watch Chevy Chase is only on for 1 year, though. That's another thing. I don't know if I'd put him in the top 10 for that fact alone. He was on for 1 year, and I guess he was huge. You know, Bill Murray, to me, is one of the best ever, too. I love that
but
guy.
But on SNL, though, I mean, he is top 15, no problem. But is Bill Murray, look, all-time career, is he in my top 10 for Saturday Night Live? Yeah, but for what he did on SNL, because of what, the lounge singer guy?
Well, that
like,
was great. That was great. Not only that, he had a couple other good gigs where, I can't remember the one where he was playing the nerd, where he was the boyfriend of Gilda Radner's character. That was brilliant stuff. He was really good. What's your number one?
You know what? It's really hard for me. My number one was Eddie Murphy, but it's tough because, I mean, John Belushi, he was with such a loaded cast, but he really did own the show. I can go either way with Murphy or Belushi. I mean, Murphy, but the thing with Murphy is that you don't have any other show, you don't have any other year of that show where one guy just owned it. I mean, nobody else was even close. The show became his. I don't think that there, I mean, John, people can say that about Belushi, but that's just not true. I mean, look at the list. In this top 10, you've got like 5-6 people that were on the same cast as John Belushi. You don't have anybody even close.
I think Murphy's more known for what he did outside SNL than what he did on it. He had the, you know, the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood, which was awesome. And
Buckwheat.
I remember going to school.
Gumby?
He did a lot of great stuff on the show, no denying that.
Yeah, how about
I remember
James
going
Brown?
To school and
get
people,
a million.
And guys in line, you know, in grammar school would be talking about, do you guys see Saturday Night Live? And, you know, and talking about the stuff he did, which was really, you know, as 19, we're talking about early 80s, right? So there's no doubt that was kind of like he was a pop culture phenomenon. And with Raw, which is outside of SNL, that was, to me, the biggest thing he did. That was, like, huge. You know, in all the movies, too, in the 80s. The guy was just a mega star. But I don't know if I'd say, you know, you're pointing at, you know, I can probably say 5 great bits that he did on Saturday Night Live that are memorable. But outside of that, I don't think he was there long enough to put him, in, you know, number one. You really think he's number one?
I really think, because if you watch those seasons, Fred, the show wasn't terrible. It wasn't terrible. And I mean, like, and his sketches were amazing. And I think you're incorrect in saying, yes, he became a megastar when he was doing SNL. But you got to keep in mind, Fred, his biggest movies did not come out until after he was done with SNL. Beverly Hills Cop was afterwards. 48 Hours was, like, right towards the way, way, way end. But by the time that he did 48 Hours, he was a megastar because of SNL. SNL made him a star, and then he cemented it with all of his movies. But he owned that show. I thought, but Raw was like 87, man. That was way down the road. I mean,
think
you're
it was earlier
about,
than that. No, it was earlier than that. Let me.
Delirious was first. Delirious was like 85, and then Raw was later. It was like 87, 88. That was by that point, Eddie Murphy was a household name. And, I mean, look.
Are you right? Raw was 87.
Making a
Holy
list.
Holy smokes. Maybe Delirious was and we get those both confused.
I'm going to go Murphy 1, and I'm going to go Belushi 2. But in that, there's no debate for those. In terms of who is in the top two, I don't. Who do you think? Do you think that there's somebody higher than Eddie Murphy than Belushi?
I think it's Will Ferrell. I think Will Ferrell, to me, brought the most consistent laughs on that show over the course of his career. I thought he was the best Saturday Night Live cast member. Not only just like working as a team too. He could also do that where he was part of a team. The hardest I probably ever laughed watching the show was when he did that. Robert Goulet doing the singing to the in the staring contest with the animal. Do you remember that one? I don't know if you remember.
Yes,
he did Robert Goulet where he was doing the rap songs. It was one of the funniest things. I'll never forget watching that. I was by myself watching that. My daughter had just been born, and I saw that episode, and that was the hardest I've ever laughed on watching a TV show. I mean, I was literally laughing. It hurt so bad. I thought it was so funny. And so that's what I go back to with him. And he was just so awesome. He had so many different bits, and he was there forever. You know, it seemed like to me, I don't know how many years he was there, but he had to be there 10 years, right?
Yeah,
go look
close.
On there. So that's a big thing too, right? I mean, you cover that much mileage, George Bush. I mean, that was perfect. And all that, he did so much great stuff on that show. I got him as my number one.
Really? Will Ferrell is actually, he's in my top 10, but he's very low in my top 10.
7 years he was there, 95 to 2002. Maybe, wow, it seems like he was there longer than that. Maybe it was because, maybe it was just because that period of time, man, just out of college at 95, you know, that's when I was in my 20s, you know, it meant, maybe the show meant a lot to me. I mean, maybe I'm kind of getting it a little bit. You know, my feelings for him is a little bit disguised by Anchorman and all the great movies I love, Old School and Wedding Crashers and the work he did outside of it. I just think that guy, to me, is the funniest ever on that show. And a lot goes into Robert Goulet's skit. He had so many great skits. I mean, I just thought he was phenomenal and fantastic. I've noticed he's a little bit of an acquired taste. Like, some people don't love him as much as I do. But you know, I think it's just too easy to say, you know, John Belushi. I love John Belushi.
Yeah, but I'm not going to pick somebody just to not pick John Belushi. That's the problem. Like, I went back and I watched some John Belushi sketches today, and, I mean, he really was amazing.
He was awesome.
I mean, he was so great. I mean, Jesus, God, I could name five. This was not my era of SNL. I watched the Will Ferrell, like, crazy. I mean, I was like, you know, in my prime. John Belushi, I was way before my time, and yet I could name off the top of my head five sketches that he did just right now.
The
I mean, like,
best
Joe
sketch
Cocker
he ever did was the... Yeah, I never thought that was that great. I mean, he was great impersonation, but, you know, whatever. Maybe because I'm not a fan of Joe Cocker. The Little Chocolate Donuts commercial period in the Wheaties is one of the funniest things you'll ever see.
God, that was
so good.
And
then Samurai Night Fever is one of the funniest things you'll ever see, where it was a parody. You got to see Saturday Night Fever to really get it, you know, with John Travolta. But it was a parody of that. Brilliant stuff there. You know, he did Beethoven. He did a fantastic impersonation of The Godfather. You know, so that was back in the day. So that was a really good one too. Captain Kirk was good. He had a ton of great stuff.
He was great. You know what? He's my number one. Belushi's number one. Murphy's my number two. My number three. So my top three. There was no question who my top three were. No question. Belushi, Murphy, and Hartman. No question. Hartman, when he was on that show, absolutely owned that show, and he made it through two major cast changes. And like, when he first came on the show was a lot weaker than by the time that he left, and he still was able to make that show watchable.
Yeah,
when
he
first
great.
Got on,
he was great, Mark, but you're actually gonna make the argument that when he was on, that he was a bigger or better cast member than Dana Carvey. How can you say that?
Yeah,
I don't
for
think,
sure
I don't think you can. There's no way. Carvey was the best guy of that era, and people would watch him to see him do impersonations. He was much Phil Hartman was great. I'm not denying that. But he was more of like a team guy. People would watch for Dana Carvey. Dana Carvey was one of the biggest. To me, he's my third or fourth. And people forget, you know, because I don't think people realize how big he was in that era. But he was huge.
But he did fizzle a lot, though, by the end, right? Like, by the time that he left, Mike Myers had kind of overshadowed him.
Are you kidding me?
I guess he did Bush. He did Perot, too, which was really good.
Oh, my God.
He great impressions. Did he have great – I mean, he had Hans and Franz. Hey, Carvey's in my top five, hands down, no question. I mean, look, my top five, Carvey, Aykroyd, Hartman, Murphy, and Belushi. That's my top five.
He was on from 86 to 93. Perot was all over 92. He did Johnny Carson, which was the best impersonation of Johnny Carson you could ever imagine. He did George H.W. Bush. He did Ross Perot. The skit of him taking Phil Hartman's Admiral Stockdale, the vice presidential candidate for Ross Perot in 1992, people don't know, Ross Perot actually took approximately 20% of the vote in 1992. You know, it was basically an independent party. He was a huge political success. However, he had a vice presidential candidate named Admiral Stockdale, who was a, you know, great American, great guy, but he did a horrible debate. And Phil Hartman did an impersonation of Stockdale, and Dana Carvey did Ross Perot, and basically he drove him out to the forest and dropped him off and then took off. It was just absolutely brilliant. One of the funniest things I've ever seen. I'll never forget that. I was in college watching that. It was just absolutely brilliant stuff. You remember that one, Mark? Did you ever see that
one? Yes. And that's a great sketch. You know what? I think the only reason that I might take Phil Hartman, though, both of them are amazing at impersonations, maybe even Carvey being a little bit better than Hartman. But the one thing, Hartman was amazing at being the straight guy in some of these sketches where he set up the other guy to be amazing, like Max Foley, where it was like obviously Farley owned that sketch, but the sketch wouldn't have been what it was if you didn't have Hartman lay the groundwork. And I feel like Carvey was just impersonations, Carvey, whereas I felt like
about,
Farrell.
What about just impersonations? He did Wayne's World. What a great character.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Okay, Garth. Like impersonations
and how about,
slash characters.
And do you even remotely recall how big Church Lady was? Church Lady was huge.
Church Lady was amazing. Church Lady was
That's
amazing.
Not an impersonation. That's just him just killing it. I mean, Garth and that alone.
Make good points, Fred.
Yeah, those two alone put him over the top with Hartman to me. And then I don't know how you can't have Chris Farley. I was just talking about this the other day. The skit that he did with for the Chippendales is, you know, we were just laughing about it. I mean, we like it just comes up randomly over the course of a year where somebody will bring that up and you go back and watch it. It's just probably one of the top five funniest things you've ever seen on Saturday Night Live. You remember that one, of course, I hope?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. And Farley had so many. I mean, he had so many characters and sketches that he did that were so great. I mean, that cast in general, I think, is one of the best casts you've ever had on the show. You make some good points here, Fred. I think you're right. I might, with your argument here, take Carvey and put him above Hartman. I think I might put Carvey at number three. And then, you know, Farley and Hartman, I think Hartman overall was better than Farley. But I mean, you know, but as far as, you know, that cast, those are the best members of that cast. In terms of, in my opinion, as far as the original cast goes, in my top 10, the only one that is in there besides Belushi is Dan Aykroyd.
Man, it's tough. There's just so many good ones there. See, I'm really partial. I kind of feel that the Kristen Wiig, Bill Hader, Will Ferrell, who else was in that group, the Forte, that cast, Fred Armisen, oh, phenomenal. That whole group to me.
Never got him.
I can't believe you didn't get that guy. I thought that guy was just incredible. Just hilarious. Like, to me, like, one of the most brilliant little skits they would do was when it was Fred Armisen and Kristen Wiig would do those two singers on the news. You remember this deal? They just did it recently where they said, well, you've been working on an album, and then you could tell they just try to do it off the top of their heads and sing together. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Oh, my God. How have you not seen this? They would sing together these songs, and you could tell they'd never heard it before, so they just would go along trying to sing whatever comes out of their mouths together. Just absolutely brilliant. And they would always end up laughing at each other, which would, you know, kind of break character, which made it even funnier. I think that whole group, the Bill Hader, Will Ferrell, Fred Armisen, Jason Sudeikis, is the most talented cast of all time.
Oh, wow. I disagree with 100. So best cast, in my opinion, God, the original cast was amazing. I mean, when you put them all together, the original cast was great. But in my top 10, I've got four guys that were in the cast that, you know, around the 89 to 94 season.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 89 to like 93, 94. I'm going to say that that's my favorite cast of all time. And then I'm going to say the original cast, and then I'll say that. So you're saying the cast was – so you're going beyond Ferrell. Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, the show definitely picked up a lot. But, I mean, Wiig's primary years, in my opinion – I mean, when you talk about eras of the show, one of the best eras of the show was when Wiig was, you know, one of the primary cast members. So, that was – you know, one of the best eras. I mean, the problem with Ferrell, I feel like Ferrell was great, but you had a lot of crappy cast members on. I mean, like, when you had, like, Molly Shannon and Chris Kattan and all those guys, I didn't think, you know, Ferrell kind of owned it as not a one-man show. I mean, it was still an ensemble show, unlike Murphy, where everyone else sucked. You still had good characters, and you had good, good sketches, and Ferrell was a part of it, but I still felt like he was heavily favored over everyone else, whereas I did feel like when Wiig was a part of it, she was a part of something bigger, though she was a huge part of it. So yeah, I mean, as far as my rankings go, she's my third favorite cast. She's in my third favorite cast of all time.
You bring up a really good point about that 89 to 93 era, because there were so many titans in that era. With Hartman, you had Chris Farley, you had Ed Sandler, and I even forgot, I mean, about
Spade.
Spade and Dennis Miller was the news. Dennis Miller was phenomenal on the news. And he was the guy in that era. I mean, he didn't do a lot on sketches, but he was, to me, the best news for that segment of the show that they ever had. And I think, who followed up Dennis Miller? Was it
Neilan, I think.
Who I also loved. Who was also fantastic in that era. Man, that's a tough one.
Who on this list? Kevin Nealon was 59th on the list. Below Horatio Sands, Denny Dillon, Paul Schaefer, and Jay Farrow. And I love Jay Farrow, by the way. I think that the most talented impersonator on the show right now is definitely Jay Farrow. Most talented cast member in terms of – because the thing with Kenan Thompson that's so great is that he doesn't do like a straight-up impersonation. He'll do impersonations that are just completely ridiculous. They don't even seem to be the character, but they're hilarious. Like he did Martin Luther King 2 weeks ago or maybe 3 weeks ago, and it was amazing. And then the last week he did the dude from the Seattle Seahawks who kept saying the guy who kept answering the same question over and over the same way, over and over again. But he was great, and I mean, I think, you know, that when you can
Beast
do mode, that,
exactly.
When you're really not acting like the person and just doing, when your impersonation isn't funny because it's so spot on, but because you just make them so corny and different.
Marshawn Lynch, by the way. See, he was doing Marshawn Lynch. I think he's really talented and really good. I still think Kate McKinnon is probably the best on the current cast. She makes me laugh the most. Let's put it that way. Or the hardest. She's really
You know what?
Talented.
She's getting there. My only issue with Kenan Thompson, he's been on for like a decade. So it's like, yeah, Kate McKinnon, certainly, I would agree with you. Right now, she's the funniest. But
what do you think
of
when you think of Kenan?
Give me a couple of years.
What's the first thing that comes in your mind? That's kind of how I judge this stuff. Like, when you see a guy, what comes in your mind? And Kenan Thompson, What's Up With That, to me, is his best skit. That was awesome. I thought he did a great job with that.
Oh, no way. For me, it's Steve Harvey.
Oh, that's pretty good, too. That was good, too.
Harvey.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if you go back and you think about these great guys, Dana Carvey, you think of right away Bush, you think of Ross Perot, you think of Johnny Carson, there's like four or five things come to mind. Will Ferrell, there's just a ton, right? I always go to the Robert Goulet, I think was the best, you know, but he had a ton of characters with the guys with, what were those two guys who go to the clubs doing the head things? And
Night at the Roxbury.
Night at the Roxbury, those two guys, I mean, that was great.
It's amazing. It's a great sketch.
Yeah. You had a ton of stuff like that, right? The cheerleaders and all that stuff.
I agree. I mean, I'm just, you know what? It's tough when you're on the show for that long, because we could also say Tim Meadows just because he was on the show for so long, but it's like same thing. When you bring up Tim Meadows, who was on for like three casts worth of people, what do you think of? And it's like, other than the ladies' man, he never stuck out, and he was always kind of in the background. That's kind of how I feel about Fred Armisen. Fred Armisen was on for like a decade, and it's like, I mean, he was good. He wasn't bad. I mean, he's not my like bottom 30 or anything, but it's like, I don't remember anything he really did. Nothing really stands out to me.
Prince? It was pretty good. I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I don't remember me doing it.
I always liked that also he would do that Spanish, he'd be a big character in that Spanish, like they do those parodies of the Spanish soap operas, which I thought were great.
Yes, that was really good. That was really good. What about Daryl Hammond at 49?
Very great impressions. That's all I pretty much, you know, Al Gore comes to mind with him. Lockbox, that was so hilarious. But not, mm-hmm. What's that?
Sean Connery, Alex Trebek.
Oh, gosh, forgot about
no,
that.
No, wait, Will Ferrell was Alex Trebek, I'm sorry.
Who did Burt Reynolds on that? That was great, too.
That was Norm MacDonald.
Norm MacDonald, that was pretty good, man. That was really good.
And yet Norm MacDonald was 135. Norm MacDonald was 6 under the worst cast member of all time.
Swartz. Was it Swartz? You remember Swartz? Yeah, you're right about, what's his name, Damon there. What's his name again? Impressionist
Which
we're
one?
Just talking about? We just,
Hammond. Daryl Hammond.
Daryl Hammond. I'm sorry, Daryl Hammond. Yeah, he was very underrated. He had a ton of, did Bill Clinton very well, did Al Gore very well. Who else did he do? I think he did Jesse Jackson, didn't he? It was pretty ridiculous. A lot of wide variety. Hey, brother, I got to hit the road, so.
Well, real fast, because right now, so Chris Farley on this list is 17. He's behind, like, a million people. If I'm just going to go through the cast that they've had really, really quickly and just pick the best person of each of these casts, and then we say our top five real fast, but best person on the show right now.
Kate McKinnon right now.
I'm going to go Kenan Thompson. Last cast, so we're going to say when Wig and Hader, that Jason Sudeikis, those guys, best person on that cast.
Whew. I'm going to go with That's pretty close. I'd say Wig.
I'd say Wig too, but Hader's close. Hader established himself, I feel, at the end. He really started to come around.
I love Jason Sudeikis too. I thought he was phenomenal. I thought he was great.
Yes,
I
agree. He's
cast.
In my top 20.
I mean, that's a tough
He's
one.
He's in my top 20.
But I just think Wig was a star of that group. You know, she just did so much. So hilarious.
Especially post-Bridesmaid. She stayed on after that movie. So by that point, she was a star, and they kind of profiled her a lot, and she was wonderful on that show. All right, so then the cast before that, I would say, is the Will Ferrell, Chris Kattan cast, Will Ferrell, right? No problem?
Yep.
Then you've got the cast with pretty much Phil Hartman, Dana Carvey. Phil Hartman, Sandler, Rock. Yeah, all those guys. David Spade.
I'd say that era, I would go with Carvey.
I'm going to pick Carvey for the era before that, when it was more like Neilan Hartman and a lot of the females that were. Because by the end, I'm going to say, like, in that last cast, I got to say it was Farley. Because, like, by the end, he was being profiled in almost everything, and he was just so amazing in, like, everything he did. He was amazing.
Yeah. Very good.
We're going to skip the crappy 80s cast, but then the early 80s, we can say Eddie Murphy, I feel, and then we're going to agree with Belushi for the first cast?
Yes.
All right, so give me your top 10.
I'm going to go Will Ferrell. Man, this is just so hard. Go Will Ferrell, Dana Carvey, number two. Why don't you go first, because I got to write in order here.
Sure. I'm going to say number one is John Belushi, number two, Eddie Murphy, number three, Dana Carvey, number four, I might say it's between Hartman and Aykroyd, but Aykroyd was really good, and I saw a lot more Phil Hartman, so I'm going to say Aykroyd at four, Hartman at five, Farley at six, Myers at seven, so we've had this huge string right here of that one cast alone. I'm going to go Wig at eight, Ferrell at nine, Radner at ten.
Radner. Wow. So I'm going to go Will Ferrell, Dana Carvey 2. I'm going to go Bill Murray 3, Belushi 4. Number 5, I'm going to put...
Really? Bill Murray is above Belushi?
I love Bill Murray. Yeah, I love everything about him. 5, I'm
going to
go...
But on Saturday Night Live?
Five,
really?
I'm going to go Eddie Murphy. 6, I'm going to go... Chris Farley. 7, I'm going to go... 7, I'm going to go Kristen Wiig. 8, I'm going to go with my favorite cast, Bill Hader. 9, Jason Sudeikis. 10, Will Forte. How do you like them apples?
No, Mike Myers?
I like Mike Myers. I don't think he was a great, first of all, I couldn't stand Coffee Talk. I like Wayne's World, but I don't think he was Austin Powers was great, but I'm not a huge Mike Myers fan on that show. I didn't think he was – I mean, he was good, but I don't think he was great. I'd put him in the top 25. I'd prefer all those guys I mentioned ahead of him.
Wow, I can't believe that you put Will Forte ahead of Mike Myers.
MacGruber is the most underrated skit ever on Saturday Night Live. I always thought it was absolutely brilliant. That along with the – what was the other thing? The Bill Hands or – what was the thing, Hanley? What was it, the thoughts with, what was that?
I can't remember. Deep Thoughts.
Deep
that
thoughts
was amazing. With Jack Handy?
Yeah, Jack Handy. That was it. I loved that one.
Those were amazing. Those were absolutely amazing. And actually, you know what? I'm going to say about MacGruber. As far as the sketch goes, I thought it was funny, but I thought that it was one of those sketches that they just beat into the ground. But the movie's amazing. So my top 5 Saturday Night Live movies in order. Wayne's World 2, Wayne's World 1, The Blues Brothers, Night at the Roxbury, MacGruber. Top 5. MacGruber's amazing. For anybody that hasn't seen it, MacGruber's great. After that, all the rest of the Saturday Night Live movies sucked.
Love that movie. MacGruber, and it was totally panned, and there were at least 10 laugh-out-loud moments in that movie.
Best Val Kilmer movie ever?
Could be. No, huh? Tombstone. Tombstone is Val Kilmer's best movie. If you haven't seen Tombstone, you need to watch it as soon as possible. So take off a few days of work, whatever. Don't go to school. Go home and watch Tombstone.
What's the best Saturday Night Live movie of all time, Fred? Is it Blues Brothers? In your
opinion? Blues Brothers.
That's what you – not Wayne's World?
No, I Blues Brothers was more important in my life. But then again, I'm sure people who watch it now might not get it as much, but it was just a revolutionary movie at the time.
it's still a great movie. It's still a great movie. My only issue with Blues Brothers is that I think it's a little overrated. I don't think it's really as, like, drop-dead funny as people make it out to be, whereas I find Wayne's World to be something that I'm like, crying at because I think it's so funny. But it's an incredible movie.
I mean, I love the music in it, too. I will say about Wayne's World, Wayne's World was one of the best actual movie-going experiences. I think it is. I was in college at the time when that came out. Like, we all went on opening night to watch it. And the atmosphere made it better. You know, it was almost like, what's that movie they show on Halloween that everybody loves, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Which actually sucks as a movie, but it's the experience of going there to see it, which makes it better. That's what I kind of felt about Wayne's World. I think the actual experience was actually better than the movie.
God, I've seen that movie 1,000 times. I just watched Wayne's World 2 last night, and it was a wonderful experience. So I'm sticking with Wayne's World 2. I think that movie, I think 2 is even better than 1. And it's got Aerosmith in it. You can't complain about Aerosmith.
Amen. Amen. All right,
well,
man.
Fred, as always, it's been fun to have a little bit of a special bullseye with you. You have yourself a good time. And next time, we'll make sure we talk about what this podcast is actually about, Bulls basketball.
Big game tomorrow night. And I should hopefully have Will from the Bull Zone coming on in the next few days. We can get an interview with him out there. In the interim, all the best to you. Enjoy the games. And keep the faith.
Let's see tomorrow. But look. If we win tomorrow, Fred, then maybe I'll start getting a little bit more excited about this little winning streak that you're so excited about right now. But right now, I think we're going to get smushed tomorrow. We'll see.
All right, man.
Until next time, Fred.